All right. Welcome back to the third and final part of my trade deadline outlook. We're down to just the Atlantic and Central divisions now. So why don't we start here with the New York Knicks in the Atlantic division? The Knicks are about $16 million below the tax, so they can take a little bit of extra salary back in any of their potential trades that they could do. This is another team that should be very interested in Miles Turner. Now that we know Julius Randle isn't just this all-time great mid-range isolation scorer, the Knicks should be looking for a true stretch five option since Thibodeau never wants to run Randle at center ever. And they've actually got a few different packages they could come up with here for Turner. The first being a swap with Evan Fournier and two future first-round picks back to Indiana. Another package could be Evan Fournier, Mitchell Robinson, Quentin Grimes, and one future first back to Indiana. Fournier has to be included in these just for salary matching. And Mitchell Robinson is included because chances are you're not going to re-sign him in free agency this summer if you're going to trade for Turner here. Quentin Grimes in conjunction with Robinson might save the Knicks from having to give up a future or a second future first rounder. And if I'm the Knicks, I would even consider including Miles McBride too, if it means you can save yourself from giving up two future firsts there. They've already got RJ Barrett, Emmanuel Quickley, and Obi Toppin, three guys on rookie deals right now that I can pretty confidently say the Knicks would love to have moving forward. If they can't get their hands on Miles Turner, I'd probably be looking towards Maxi Kleba in Dallas. He's one of the Mavs' key defensive players and is a valuable part of that five-out offense they run at times. Kleba's shooting about 36% from three on about four attempts a game this year. Even that would be awesome to have alongside Julius Randle. Would Nerlens Noel, Quentin Grimes, and a second get anything done there? Maybe not. I'm not sure. They could also try moving Evan Fournier in a future second or two in this deal, but they would have to take back Boban for that to work financially. Fournier is obviously a negative contract right now, but if the Knicks attach a couple seconds or even Quentin Grimes, would that be enough or even worth it for the Knicks? I'm just spitballing here at this point, but the Knicks pretty desperately need this semi-stretch five option. I'm just not sure a consistent offense can exist here with Julius Randle and an inside center sharing the floor all game long. Another need the Knicks could look to fill is the point guard position. They've got to find a way to not rely on all these Julius Randle isolation possessions. Yes, Derrick Rose has missed a ton of time, but he's injury prone as is, and Kemba Walker's just been a massive failure for the Knicks this year. The only starting caliber point guard really made available right now is Spencer Dinwiddie in Washington. But, you know, there's a very obvious reason why he's been made available. He's down to 51% true shooting on the season and only about 31% from three. So unless the Knicks have reason to believe that would turn around in New York, you probably just need a better scorer or creator alongside Randle than Dinwiddie. It's about all I got on the Knicks for now. Let's walk around the corner here to the Brooklyn Nets. They are about $35 million above the tax, generating a massive $110 million tax bill for ownership. That's second only to the Warriors. The easiest road to shedding some tax dollars is to just dump Paul Millsap. Maybe there's a team willing to offer a second rounder in return out there, but I'd be happy just to save the extra $7 to $8 million by paying someone straight cash to take Millsap's minimum salary. The other guy they could look to offload is Javon Carter. He's only playing about 11 minutes a game for Brooklyn right now. He's at the very end of the rotation, a whole lot of garbage minutes there, garbage time minutes rather, and he hasn't really been any good for the Nets this year, unfortunately. He's not hitting threes like he was in the two seasons prior, coming off Phoenix's bench, and the Nets stand to save about $15 million on their tax bill if they can get rid of his $3.6 million salary. Maybe Millsap and Carter would have to be packaged together. Or you might actually have to attach a second round pick to get rid of Carter because he's got that second year guaranteed on his deal beyond this season. The only other expendable contract they have right now is Joe Harris, who's only in year two of that 4-year $72 million deal. But without any first rounders really to trade, moving off Harris is going to be really tough, especially since he's missed about 2.5 months now with that ankle injury turned ankle surgery. If he has another stinker in the playoffs, though, I would expect Brooklyn to be much more aggressive with these potential Joe Harris trades in the offseason. You probably won't see anything before the deadline, though. The Nets would also like to fill that Jeff Green-sized vacancy on the roster currently. they need another like 6'7", 6'8" forward that can play some small ball five at times, but there's just not a lot of those guys currently available. Dorian Finney-Smith is probably of interest to Brooklyn, but there's not much smoke around Dallas having any interest in moving him. Daniel House might be a cheaper option too from Utah. Obviously, House doesn't fit that small ball five role, but he does offer some offense on the wing, more so than James Johnson and DeAndre Bembry at least. Brooklyn's asset bank consists of a 2028 first-round pick and two future seconds, so they're real thin in terms of assets they can send out. Though kind of like that Lakers 2027 pick we talked about in part one, I'd be pretty interested in that Nets 2028 pick. Presumably they'd be pretty bad by then, draining all of their resources on this current big three with Durant, Harden, and Kyrie. But again, it's pretty hard for a lot of GMs to justify trading for a pick that far out, because a lot of the times GMs aren't lasting 5-6 years into the future. They're on the clock just like most coaches in the league. The home run play for Brooklyn is probably Thaddeus Young, I would say, but their only matching salary for Young is Patty Mills and Bruce Brown. Obviously, that's not something the Nets are going to look to do, but there's about a 50-50 shot that because of Thaddeus Young's larger contract, he's making about $14 million, there's a good chance he's just bought out by San Antonio, so the Nets probably fancy themselves as a top destination for some of these buyout guys like Thaddeus Young. Let's move on here to the Toronto Raptors. The Raps are another team barely below that luxury tax threshold. They've got about $300,000 in breathing room. Obviously, Goran Dragic is going to be moved here before the deadline in some way. $19 million in salary isn't the easiest contract to find a new home for, but the Raptors have all of their future firsts and five of their next seven future seconds. Dragic is also on an expiring deal, so there's no long-term burden on the team that acquires him. Dallas has long been discussed as a suitor for Dragic and would be a wonderful upgrade at backup point guard. Dwight Powell and Boban Marjanovic match salaries there, but they both have another guaranteed season, so Toronto would probably look to get at least one second round pick back in that deal, I would guess. Boston is probably another team that could use Dragic. He provides some much needed pick and roll play and shot creation at the point guard position, which they've sorely lacked this year. Josh Richardson and Dennis Schroeder match salary here. Would a couple second rounders from Toronto get a deal done there? I'm not sure. I would imagine both Schroeder and Richardson would find minutes in a Raptors rotation that's consistently only playing 8 deep, even in the regular season. Toronto probably doesn't do this kind of deal, though, if it costs them a first-round pick, though. The Raptors have reportedly been shopping around a package of Malachi Flynn, Chris Boucher, and a future first. That's not going to get you into the Miles Turner or Rashawn Holmes sweepstakes, but it actually might be able to get you Yusuf Nurkic if you're looking for that center upgrade. He's not exactly the mobile big on the defensive end that Nick Nurse really loves, but he offers skilled paint scoring and some brute strength on the defensive glass, both of which are areas Toronto needs a ton of help in this season. Nurkic is on an expiring deal, making about $12 million right now, but they would be acquiring his bird rights, allowing Toronto to go above the salary cap to re-sign him this offseason if they so choose. Montrezl Harrell could be another short-term option. He would fit right into Toronto's relentless offensive rebounding agenda, and even at 6'7", he's a way bigger interior threat on offense than Kem Birch or Precious Achiuwa right now. Would Boucher in a second rounder potentially get a deal done there for Washington? Hard to say. This next part, there's no actual real reporting on this, but Toronto is really struggling for competent backup point guard minutes right now. Fred VanVleet's going to make his first All-Star team this year, but you just can't be relying on him for 38-39 minutes a night. That's kind of why I like Dennis Schroeder as a very short-term option for the Raps right now. Maybe they could make a deal with the Knicks for Kemba? He and Tibbs don't seem to be a great mix at all, and the Knicks have made him very available ahead of the trade deadline. Kemba would certainly get consistent backup minutes behind and alongside Fred VanVleet in Toronto. That's another deal where Chris Boucher matches the salary. Toronto probably tosses in a second rounder there as well, I would imagine. Boucher would be an interesting semi-stretch five option for the Knicks. I would obviously rather go all in on Turner or even go for Kleba as a backup. Chris Boucher would kind of be a last resort for the Knicks, I'd imagine, though. Next up here, let's take a look at the Boston Celtics. First order of business, they're about $2.7 million into the tax, so they will definitely look to squeeze under that threshold. The easiest way to do this is going to be straight up dealing Dennis Schroeder. He's on just a one-year deal, and I'm sure the Celtics would move him just about anywhere for even a single second-round pick. After that, really the only guy I think they should actively be shopping is Marcus Smart. Of course, that would put Boston in pretty dire need of a new point guard. But hey, Brown and Tatum are basically doing all the decision-making on offense right now, in the half court especially. I'm also a pretty big fan of Peyton Pritchard as well, and I'd really like to see him get some more on-ball reps as a true point guard out there. Back to Marcus Smart, though, next season will be year one of his four-year $77 million extension. He's set to make about $21 million in the final year of that deal at 31 years old. That could turn into a pretty sour deal for the Celtics very quickly. I'd imagine Boston would at least consider moving Smart and a first-round pick for a quality starting point guard. It's almost impossible to find a trade partner meeting that current criteria right now, though. And there's still a lot of noise from fans especially about potentially breaking up the Jason Tatum-Jaylen Brown duo. I'm very much against that. Teams would kill to have just a single 6'7", two-way, all-star caliber wing, and the Celtics have two. Two obvious all-star wings, one of them more superstar potential than the other. But the Celtics obviously need a true point guard out there. Tatum and especially Brown's passing is not where it needs to be in order for Boston to have a competent half-court offense. I would say just look at what they did with a healthy Kemba Walker and Gordon Hayward the last few seasons. This group made the conference finals multiple times. I would turn this Celtics roster over a dozen times before seriously considering breaking up Tatum and Brown. All right, last but not least here for the Atlantic Division, let's take a look at the Philadelphia 76ers. I'm just going to get the Ben Simmons portion of this out of the way first. Now that there's all these rumors of James Harden potentially being unhappy in Brooklyn and frustrated with Kyrie Irving, suddenly there's reports out there that say Philly will pursue James Harden in free agency via sign and trade. So from that report alone, I would almost certainly rule out a Ben Simmons trade at the deadline here. It looks like Daryl Morey is very interested in using Simmons to facilitate a sign and trade with Harden over any other deal with a player they could acquire at the deadline here. Morey has already turned away multiple offers for guys like Domantas Sabonis, De'Aaron Fox, John Collins. So he's pretty clearly committed to getting his star player in return for Ben Simmons. He's not looking for one of these fringe all-star guys. If it weren't for these new James Harden rumors, I would probably have done a deal for even De'Aaron Fox and a single first-round pick by now. I think he's the best player and best fit available to pair with Embiid at the moment. Plus, you could always use Fox as a facilitator for another deal in the offseason if the fit with Embiid just doesn't work out. So for me, Fox is the guy I would have went after by now in a Ben Simmons trade, but I'd say Morey is more than justified in holding off if there's a real chance to latch on to James Harden this offseason. Tobias Harris is owed $112 million fully guaranteed over the next three seasons. It is going to be impossible to move off of him without including Ben Simmons or Tyrese Maxey in that deal, and there's been no reporting of that, at least on the Tyrese Maxey front. Philly wanted Sacramento to take on Tobias Harris in a deal for Fox while also giving up future draft assets. I'd say the Kings were more than justified in swiftly ending that negotiation. I can't believe they gave Harris $180 million fully guaranteed. Just imagine this team with Jimmy Butler instead of Tobias Harris, with the ability to add more pieces with a Ben Simmons trade. They messed that one up pretty good. This Philly team could be competing for a title right now, if not for that single decision to go with Tobias Harris over Jimmy Butler. Some other housekeeping stuff here. The 76ers are about $6 million in the luxury tax. Danny Green makes $10 million this season and the next, so I'd expect he'll be the guy the 76ers look to move on from. He's gradually lost his starting spot with this crew. Philly's got a lot of their own draft picks available, so they will probably look to move Green and probably a first round pick for basically just a salary dump. I'm sure OKC would do business for Danny Green to, again. He's also a guy that makes a bit of sense, actually, as a limited 3-and-D wing option next to Shea Gilgeous-Alexander and Josh Giddey in the short term. But yeah, if the Sixers are looking to get out of the tax, they're probably looking at dumping Danny Green in a first-round pick. Okay, let's get into the Central Division here, our final destination, starting with the defending champion Milwaukee Bucks. The Bucks are $20 million into the tax, but ownership is very committed to this group and have proven willing to pay that tax in order to win another championship. Looking at this Bucks team, they're definitely looking to beef up their closing five right now. As it stands, they're probably looking at Drew Holiday, Chris Middleton, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Pat Connaughton, and probably Bobby Portis. I don't think Dante DiVincenzo has shown quite enough since returning from injury to be in that five yet. Maybe they look to move him and some future seconds for a guy that can help them right now. DiVincenzo only makes about $4.6 million right now, but he is a restricted free agent this offseason, so trading for those rights could be valuable to a team, actually. Originally, I thought maybe they could use DiVincenzo as a facilitator for Jeremy Grant, but giving Grant that $100 million extension this offseason brings the tax bill from about $40 million up to almost $100 million annually for the foreseeable future, and that's just a gargantuan ask from any ownership that isn't basically Joe Lacob and the Warriors exactly. I would love Justin Holiday on this Bucks team. He would be such an awesome fit when the Bucks look to switch everything, particularly late in games, especially if the lineup looks something like brothers Drew and Justin, Chris Middleton, Pat Connaughton, and Giannis. Maybe if Indiana was willing to give back a couple second round picks to you, you could do a DiVincenzo for Holiday swap with the Pacers. That might be kind of a light sell on DiVincenzo, though. Another guy they could look to get back in a potential DiVincenzo trade is Robert Covington from the Trailblazers. He would add a lot more length to these switching lineups, though Covington is much more of a help defender at this point in his career. He's not exactly an on-ball defender. A deal for Covington would probably look something like DiVincenzo and George Hill. I would probably be interested in that if I'm the Blazers, unless you're getting like more than a first round pick elsewhere, then that's probably just a better deal. But if you're not getting more than a first round pick from another deal, I think DiVincenzo would be a pretty interesting add for the Blazers. The other thing Milwaukee is looking to add is another center to do the standard Milwaukee rim protecting stuff so that you're not so reliant on Giannis during the regular season. Especially with Brook Lopez's back injury, they would like to have some additional insurance at that position. Brook Lopez makes $27 million guaranteed the next two seasons, and with their current depleted asset bank, that's just not a contract they're going to be able to move on from at this point in time. A really funny trade here could be the reacquisition of Robin Lopez, actually. George Hill and a second rounder probably gets the deal done there. This also sheds George Hill's $4 million guaranteed for next season. Robin Lopez's $5 million owed this year is an expiring deal. I think this deal makes sense for both sides. The Bucks could also reunite DJ Augustine in the buyout market if they want to fill that regular season backup point guard void left by George Hill. Augustine is making $7 million this season, so I highly doubt Houston's going to be able to find a trade there. I would expect him to be a guy that's almost certainly bought out by the deadline here. If the Bucks really don't want to trade George Hill, though, they'll be able to find a center on the buyout market. There's always an abundance of replacement-level backup centers available more so than at any other position. Looking next here at the Detroit Pistons, obviously their entire trade deadline is just going to be centered around the bidding war for Jeremy Grant. It's really up to them to evaluate potential picks and young players that they could receive for him. I'd be trying to sell Jeremy Grant pretty hard to Minnesota right now, I think. They're pretty desperate to get in the playoff mix here with Karl Anthony Towns. They own all of their future first rounders, and they have a clear gap to fill at that starting power forward position. If Detroit can get Minnesota to commit multiple first round picks, then a real bidding war could potentially ensue from there. And if not, then you've still got two picks for Jeremy Grant, which is a win in of itself. Detroit's move in 2020 free agency to acquire Grant was really fascinating. They were a rebuilding team with a ton of cap space. They used that cap space on Jeremy Grant, got blessed with the first overall pick, Cade Cunningham, the following season. And now they can kind of, you know, as I said before, set up this bidding war for Jeremy Grant. For rebuilding teams, I think this is a super interesting strategy that I can't really recall a recent example of either. I kind of wonder if other teams, mainly the Thunder right now, would ever tap into this kind of strategy, using your cap space to sign a guy that you know will have extremely positive trade value within the next year or two. I don't think this next move would happen, but I would try pretty hard to move Corey Joseph at the deadline here, mainly so Dwayne Casey can stop playing him so many damn minutes. Let Cade Cunningham, let Killian Hayes get all the reps. You're not trying to win games right now anyway. And with $10 million owed the next two seasons combined, the Pistons could pretty easily get a second rounder for Joseph, I'd imagine. Again, I don't think this will actually happen, but it's a move I would strongly consider in the Pistons' shoes. I wish I had more to talk about with the Pistons here, but they're not in danger of the luxury tax. They don't really have any bad long-term money. Kelly Olynyk is probably their worst contract right now, but I actually really like his fit next to Cade Cunningham, on offense at least. And aside from that, everything's just going to revolve around Jeremy Grant, which I would expect that bidding war to start heating up here real soon. Let's move on now to the Indiana Pacers here, who are pretty much in fire sale mode. There's been talks of only moving one of either Sabonis or Turner, but I think that's ridiculous. They should be looking to move on from all three of LeVert, Sabonis, Turner to start a full-blown rebuild. They can probably get second rounders here for guys like Jeremy Lamb, Torrey Craig, and Justin Holiday, though I think they could set up a smaller scale bidding war for Holiday. Miles Turner is the easiest move to make here. The Hornets, Knicks, and Pelicans are probably the three teams most interested in his services at the moment. From Charlotte, you're looking at PJ Washington, James Bouknight, and draft compensation. From New Orleans, you're probably looking at Jonas Valanciunas, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, and draft compensation, though presumably a third team would get involved for Valanciunas here. From the Knicks, you're probably looking at Evan Fournier, Mitchell Robinson, and one of their younger guys, either Miles McBride or Quentin Grimes. I think I like the Hornets' potential package best, actually. I would say PJ Washington and, well, James Bouknight especially have the highest upside here. And Mitchell Robinson from the Knicks kind of scares me a little bit. He's a little older. He'll be looking for a big extension this offseason, but he's just kind of a walking injury, it feels like, at this point. So I'd be really nervous there if I'm the Pacers. But I think the real bidding war here ultimately gets driven by New Orleans, because they're the team who theoretically stands to gain the most from Miles Turner due to the very specific needs around Zion Williamson. They have the most draft assets to offer. They've got Nikhil. So to me, the Pelicans kind of have the ability to set the market here for Miles Turner. Domantas Sabonis is a much tougher sell. I don't know how he fits on a contender because he can't defend anything. So who's the team that really wants to give up a bunch of assets for Sabonis? I guess it's a team that's trying to just be relevant, hoping to get in the bottom half of the playoff mix. Based on that criteria, the list of teams you're looking at is basically the Kings, Wizards, and Timberwolves exactly. I would instantly scratch off the Timberwolves from that list because of Towns. I don't think Towns and Sabonis is a combination you want on the defensive end. Would I trade for Sabonis as Washington or Sacramento? No, I wouldn't, but I do think those teams are probably interested in a trade to help make the playoff push. Washington probably would have to send out Rui Hachimura, Corey Kispert, and at least a first rounder, along with whatever salary filler. In this case, that would be Montrezl Harrell, I suppose. Surely the Kings wouldn't be insane enough to move Fox or Halliburton in this deal, but what do they give up then? Davion Mitchell, Marvin Bagley, and multiple future picks? They own just about all of their future first and second rounders, I guess, so that could be an option, I suppose. I don't really know what better offers Indiana could really hope for Sabonis. Both of those quick mock offers there from the Wizards and Kings are overpays in my eyes, but probably underpays for what the Pacers are looking for in return. I mentioned Caris LeVert earlier. Reporting says the Pacers are looking for multiple first-round picks for Caris LeVert, which is completely insane. that's not going to happen. I'd be hesitant to even give up a single first round pick for him, but I'd be shocked if nobody came to the table with a first for LeVert. Multiple firsts is completely insane, though. That's just going to be a deal where Indiana has to decide whose pick they project to be the most favorable for them. I can't imagine the matching salary they'd get back in a deal for LeVert would do them any good moving forward, though. As I mentioned before, if you can get a second rounder for Jeremy Lamb or Torrey Craig, you probably take that and run if you're the Pacers. I would try to run the price up on Justin Holiday, though. Great perimeter guard defender, great three-point shooter who plays almost entirely off the ball on offense. I probably wouldn't accept anything less than two decent second rounders for Holiday here. If you can get a first, fantastic. I don't expect that to be on the table, though. I think that's a bit of a high sell for Holiday. Only got a couple teams left here, so let's check out the Cleveland Cavaliers. To me, they've been the biggest surprise this season by far. Jarrett Allen and Evan Mobley have made their defense awesome, while Darius Garland has shouldered an unbelievable weight on the offensive end without Colin Sexton. I guess we should just start off with Sexton, huh? He's an upcoming restricted free agent and is someone that just doesn't really seem to fit with this Cavs team anymore now that Garland has emerged into a probable all-star. I doubt we'll actually see a Sexton deal before the deadline, but if the Cavs can't re-sign him for at most $15 million per season this offseason, I'd expect some pretty aggressive sign-and-trade talks at that point in time. Probably not going to see a deal here before the trade deadline, though. The Cavs are pretty close to the tax apron right now, with about $3 million in breathing room. If they wanted, I'm sure they could pay another team to take on Ed Davis's minimum salary, but I'm not sure that'll be necessary unless they make another move prior where they take on more money. The Cavs' biggest hole to fill right now is at that starting three spot. Markkanen is fun for the simple fact of having 3 7-footers out there and actually making it work. But you need a real two-way wing size defender once you get into the playoffs here. I'm a huge fan of Isaac Okoro here early on, but I still think his best position moving forward is going to be at the two since he's, you know, more of a 6'4", 6'5 guard. The question is, should the Cavs make a big swing to land a true small forward before the trade deadline? I'd be pretty cautious of that. Garland, Mobley, Allen, and Okoro are all 23 and younger. I don't think there's any real reason to fast-track this rebuild. I think the Cavs know they've got a really special crew here. Also, if you're going for someone like Harrison Barnes or Jeremy Grant, you'd almost certainly have to give up Isaac Okoro at the very least. So I probably wouldn't go for that, but I could definitely see the Cavs offering up a package. No, I don't even think they could. Would the Cavs even offer up Okoro for Harrison Barnes? Would you go Rubio, Okoro, and a future first for Barnes? I feel like that's almost an overpay. I feel like that's rushing it a little bit there. If the Cavs are really looking to fill that small forward gap as soon as possible, I would instead look to Robert Covington as the cheaper, potentially shorter-term option. Seti Osman and Dylan Windler match salary there, but will Covington command a first-round pick on the trade market? Hard to say. Will a couple seconds do the trick? I would definitely give up multiple second round picks for half a season of Covington in a heartbeat if I'm the Cavs. But if you've got to give up a future first rounder for him, then you have to ask yourself in advance what kind of deal Covington is looking for in free agency. And if you can meet that demand, then I would probably say go for it. Seems like a good deal right now. But if they're not willing to give up the first round pick for Covington and then pay him again this offseason, then it's just not going to be worth it to do that kind of deal for 2.5 months of Covington. A name the Cavs have been linked to as of late is Caris LeVert, who is supposedly at the top of the Cavs' target list ahead of the deadline. He's under contract through the season and next owed $34 million total. I would hold pretty firm at just one first-round pick if I'm the Cavs. I'm certainly not giving up multiple firsts, and I'm certainly not giving up Isaac Okoro in any deal for LeVert. I think Ricky Rubio and a future first-rounder is a good, probably starting and end point here. The Pacers get a first rounder and it also frees up $17 million in cap space for them this offseason because Rubio's deal is expiring. You could throw in an extra second rounder in there as well, but that would be my cutoff point for sure. I'm not giving up more than a first and a second for LeVert. Anything beyond that is a no-go for me. That's about all I got on the Cavs here. So, last but not least, we have the Chicago Bulls. The Bulls are about $3 million below the tax, so they won't be looking to take back any excess salary in any potential moves they make. Especially with Patrick Williams out, the Bulls have a real need for one of those elusive two-way wings to join their closing five. Jeremy Grant probably isn't realistic here because they want Patrick Williams, and the Bulls were rightly turned off by that, I'd say. So I'd be going to the Kings for Harrison Barnes if I'm the Bulls. Kobe White, Derek Jones Jr., and one of their minimum guys match a salary here. And they would have to agree to trade their next allowable draft pick, as the Bulls don't currently outright own any unconditional first rounders at the moment. I'd say that's a pretty good offer, actually, for the Kings. That Bulls pick would likely convey to the Kings around 2025 or 26. And they could always involve a third team for Kobe White if they don't see him as a particularly good fit with Fox and Halliburton. For the Bulls, that would give them a closing five of Lonzo Ball, Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan, Harrison Barnes, and Nikola Vucevic. Add in Alex Caruso, Io DeSumo, Tony Bradley, and that's a pretty sweet eight-man playoff rotation. Javonte Green probably gets some minutes there too. They can always look for another wing on the buyout market too, though, if necessary. Yeah, so Kobe White, Derek Jones Jr., and their next available first for Harrison Barnes. Maybe the Bulls can throw in a second, and that would make the Kings include Mo Harkless as well. Some variation of that package for Harrison Barnes is definitely what I'd be pushing hardest for, though, if I'm the Bulls. Even with Harrison Barnes, though, I don't know what their game plan is for guarding someone like Kevin Durant or Giannis Antetokounmpo in the playoffs. Barnes is a nice secondary defender, great in rotations, but he's not your on-ball stopper by any means. Vucevic just gets folded in the paint just about every time he matches up with Giannis. Funny enough, this team could really use a guy like Thaddeus Young, actually, who they unfortunately had to give up in that DeRozan sign-in trade in the offseason. Yeah, there's just not a lot of those kind of big wing stoppers available right now. I doubt Miami would consider dealing PJ Tucker. Maybe you give the Mavs a call about Dorian Finney-Smith. Does Kobe White in a future second do anything there? Probably not, if I'm Dallas, honestly. Finney-Smith is such a perfect fit on both ends of the floor next to Luka. Man, I wish I had some other kind of even smallish trades to propose for the Bulls here. But it really feels like it's Harrison Barnes or bust for Chicago at the deadline here. Huh, actually I lied. Wait a minute. I do have one small move they can make. If they are able to acquire Harrison Barnes for that Kobe White, Derek Jones Jr. package, then that actually puts Chicago into the tax. From there, they'd probably just pay a team either in cash or a single second rounder to get off of Troy Brown Jr.'s $5 million expiring contract. Yeah, that would get them out of the tax. So yeah, if they're able to get Harrison Barnes, expect another move to dump Troy Brown, basically. All right. That's going to do it here for the third and final installment of my trade deadline outlook. Part 1 and 2 are both live on Apple and Spotify. If you enjoyed part 3, you'll probably enjoy parts 1 and 2 also. Thank you all for tuning in, and I'll talk to you all soon. Until then.